I know I'm human. And if you were all these things, then you'd just attack me right now. So some of you are still human. This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to, but it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over, then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill it. And then it's won. There's a storm hitting us in 6 hours. We're gonna find out who's who.
On the Substance, a podcast aimed at being biblical, thoughtful, and human. Join us each week as we engage the culture without the culture war. I'm your host, Philip Marinello, joined by my friends and co-hosts, Trevor Aiken.
Howdy, howdy.
And Vincent Edwards.
What's going on?
This week we are joined by a very illustrious guest, projection booth host, and serial Blu-ray commentary track giver, Mike White.
Thanks for having me aboard.
Welcome to The Substance, Mike. Thanks for joining us here.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for the invite. This is great.
And this is our spooky Halloween episode.
I promise not to gush too much, but I've been a huge fan of the podcast for a long time. The Thing. Your Thing episode is what, like 4.5 hours, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I've listened to it twice, and wow. Many of your other... I mean, that was one of the first ones I listened to in the last couple of weeks. I listened to it again to kind of glean from stuff and listeners. If you enjoyed the movie, we're going to get to the movie in a second. If you enjoyed it and want to just know more about the film itself, highly recommend that episode. We'll link it in the show notes here.
Nice.
Yeah, and this film came out in 1982. So I really shouldn't have a spoiler, but if you haven't watched it, then and you want to watch it before listening to this episode or any of Mike's content, go ahead, stop this episode for a second, go take a watch, and then come on back.
You won't regret it.
If you're interested in this movie, you really should see it before you listen to the discussion here today. So Trevor, I want to get to Mike here. But I would love to hear your thoughts as our resident non-movie watcher. What did you think of this?
Well, man, I definitely enjoyed the film. I was amused by it, I think, which I thought, I don't know. Maybe that's what they're going for. I don't know. Definitely saw the tension of the suspicion, those kind of things, but I don't know. I was just on Team Dog from the beginning, and I was like, you know what? This dog's been shot at and stuff, and even if he turns out to like eat everybody, it's all gonna be all right because like they, you know, he's just been through a lot, and that makes total sense.
I did enjoy your like live tweet style text messages for an hour and 45 minutes last night as you watched it.
Yeah. So they like reveal the thing, and I thought it looked like Donkey Satan. I enjoyed it though. I did enjoy it. Watch out for Norway. That's all I can say about that.
There you go.
Gotta watch out for Norway.
Vince, what was your nutshell initial thoughts of it?
It was one where I probably, if I had a mirror in front of myself, I would see myself making like faces of disgust.
That's a great one to film somebody's reaction to show it to them for the first time.
Yeah,
I bet that's a good YouTube hole. Let's see.
Yeah, it wasn't so much like, oh my gosh, this is so disturbing. More than it's like, oh, it's just you could tell. I'm sure because it's the 80s. I'm sure they're using a lot of stuff to make this thing, and it's a thing for sure. So.
40 years later, it holds up very well.
Yeah, I will say that. It's definitely going, it's jarring enough still to be like, dang, this is kind of crazy. So, and then obviously the elements of suspicion and really not knowing who it is and suspecting like, oh, it's that dude because he's like, he looks like he's sweating and it's super cold out there. But then it's not him. So it's just like this balance of who is it? And I think that really kept the movie intriguing. I don't typically enjoy like old school movies, but that one was really good.
Mike, you want to take the reins here? Give the listeners kind of a synopsis. If I would imagine the average person who goes to the movies a couple times a year for the big blockbusters might not have heard of this. We may be introducing them to it. How would you describe the film for a newcomer?
I mean, yeah, the words that you guys have hit on, the idea of the tension, the who is hiding something, and that it could be multiple people too, is always interesting as well. But yeah, this group of men all in this very isolated location, and we've seen that kind of thing before, of course, but just to have that plus the added elements of horror and sci-fi to it. And yeah, you just take the paranoia and you just crank that knob. And who is the person? Who is something that they're pretending to be? And yeah, I just, this movie, I'm so glad to hear that you guys enjoyed this, because I know I've had other friends that have watched this and they're just like, yeah, I couldn't get into it. The special effects were too fake. And I'm like, what?
What? That's insane. That's literally insane.
That's a whack take. That's a whack take. I can totally say that.
Yeah. Well, they grew up on digital effects, and so it's like, I don't know. I thought these things were right there on the screen. You know, this is real life that's happening. So
I vividly remember my experience. I was trying to remember when it was. Trevor, you might think this is funny. I think the first time I saw it, I don't remember how I heard about it. I'm pretty sure I borrowed a VHS from Hannah Abbott's dad and I watched it in like the fifth grade. So I was like 10 years old when I watched it on VHS the first time. And it was incredible. I was completely covered in goosebumps. Like the tension in the blood test scene, like I almost jumped through the ceiling, like the monster, almost myself, when they finally got to the guy who was the thing. Like, that was terrifying, but also affecting. Like, I don't remember. It's almost not pretty scary. Intense. It's not scary like Halloween is scary.
No,
but it's scary because even though it's a science fiction film about an organism from another planet who has ostensibly gone to other worlds and like conquered them and has mimicked them, and there's not really one of the cool things about the character design. The thing is, like, there's not like a thing, and this is what the thing looks like, because the organism mimics things that it comes across and kills and conquers. You see things ostensibly from other worlds. You see some things of dogs. You see some things of humans after it's taken them over, and it's just this parasitic thing that just consumes and consumes and protects itself at all costs. So like, while that is kind of a far-fetched concept because of the actual science fiction, the science of the science fiction and the way it was handled, it kind of is like plausible. Yeah. Like, you can suspend your disbelief and be like, this is a real situation with, what did he say? Like 2,700 hours or whatever. Like, if this thing hits like a populated area, like the stakes are literally like Earth's future.
Yeah.
If the thing hits a populated area, like, humanity's done.
I thought what you're just saying right there just made me think of how clever it is, really, that they take that approach on the story, because, you know, so much in sci-fi it's supposed to be aliens, but, you know, it's almost like the opposite of Star Trek, where it's like all these guys are supposed to be aliens, but like, that's just a human with pointy ears, and that's just a human with a wrinkly forehead. They're all just based off of what we know on Earth. But like, the John Carpenter or whoever's doing this film, like, this is how little I know.
Rob Bottin, who was 22 when he made these special effects.
Yeah.
It's insane. Smart, because then like everything that he does that is based off of a like Earth object pattern, like, makes sense in the story. So it's kind of interesting, you know, that he kind of covers bases that way. I mean, not that that's super important, but it's clever. Such
a crazy premise, but it makes it more real in the tension, in the stakes, like the human aspect of it. Like, we understand fear and paranoia and disbelief. And I remember, especially the last 4 or 5 years, really seeing the memes circulating around of MacReady talking into the voice recorder going, we're all very tired and nobody trusts each other. Like, I've seen that go around a lot lately. But I mean, you understand how they get to that. And it's like, you can't, you've known these men for years, but the thing is such a perfect organism that you couldn't, and you wouldn't even know if you were the thing.
Right.
Actually, like, you would relate, and like, maybe in a, on a some level you would, but I mean, you don't see the thing, the men who are taken over, you don't really see them in cahoots with each other, because part of it is also like, each organism is its own thing too.
Right. It's like, do they even recognize, if there are two people that are the thing, would they even recognize that they are these foreign objects, you know? And I love this whole idea too, especially you were talking about the blood test scene, seeing how the blood reacts, and especially seeing when the blood is moving across the floor. And I'm always just like, you better torch that blood, buddy, you know? 'Cause that blood is an organism unto itself. And it's just like, these small little microscopic pieces can get into wherever and infect people. And it's just, you know, it's such a, I mean, especially now with COVID and everything, it's like, yeah, little droplets can infect you. And it's just, it's amazing to think of how, you know, that when I saw it, it was, we were thinking about it in terms of like HIV and AIDS.
Well, yeah, and now the AIDS crisis, they weren't planning on that, unless he's a very good liar for a long time. But John Carpenter pretty much kind of tells it like it is. He said they were kind of ahead of that, and then like AIDS happened about a year or two after the thing dropped. And then they're like, whoa, like this movie that had kind of become a cult hit critically, it was super destroyed because everybody loved E.T.
Yeah.
Unfortunate release date really hurt this movie on its initial release. Did you go deep into that, Mike, on your show? Like, didn't E.T. come out like 2 weeks before the thing?
I think it was, yeah. And just... Yeah.
A much sweeter, kinder alien.
Yeah. I did see a good meme recently. It was the Marty McFly thing where it's like him with a poster of the thing behind him. He's like, you guys might not like this, but your kids are going to love this movie.
That's excellent.
That's funny.
That is excellent.
That's actually a super terrifying thought. Now just bringing it back to what you said, like the, because I didn't think about that until now. Like, they're pouring the blood reacts, and then it's dragging itself across the floor, and it's like, okay, that gets in or on someone, the thing is revived, and it's all starting over again.
Yeah,
and that's like, that actually, now that you said this, like, that's just such a terrifying thought, because you're seeking to create a resolution to this because you know that whether or not it's a nice alien or not, it seems to be very self-sufficient and seeking to stay self-sustained at the cost of life.
When you never get one of these guys who is infected saying, aha, I will conquer the rest of the earth within 2,700 hours, and this is my big plan. You know, it's like, no, the thing has no plan. Its only purpose is to survive and procreate.
Yeah.
Man.
It's pretty scary.
That is.
Yeah. When he was in that scene with the blood test and everything, I was so mad at that Degum flamethrower. I was like, why don't we have a backup plan or something to deal with it? I'm like, you just torch the thing, Degum. You tied up all these dudes to the thing, you idiot.
That was what you texted me. You're like, so he's got a really good plan with the blood test, but not a great plan how to deal with it when he finds when he finds a positive result.
Right. Yeah, they're all just standing there like, and then the one dude with the flamethrower gets
the two guys next to him tied up on the couch. They're like, I don't want to be tied up to this right now.
Yeah. They were like, nope. And then the other thing about, like, Mike, what you said about like two folks being the thing, maybe wouldn't even know that they were the thing. I don't know, like, intentionally you say that, like, the movie ends with two folks talking about, like,
I want to save the end
and not know
a little bit here. It's really interesting. But I will say, one of the things that Vince and Mike both mentioned, I've seen this movie, I don't know, probably a dozen or more times. For a long time, I would watch this in the fog every Halloween season. I like Halloween, but, like, that's not an every year watch for me. But, like, I've seen this movie a ton of times, and movies, the ending wasn't as like stuck in my head as obviously like the big set piece special effects. And for a long time, I kind of thought the end was a lot more like nihilistic showdown type ending. Like in my head, it's like the two guys that are like facing off against each other. But really, I mean, we can get to that at the end. It's maybe not as dark and bleak as I remember it.
It's kind of sad though, because it's like we never really know if the thing makes it home. You know, it's like the thing is kind of like E.T., except he doesn't make any friends and he kills more people, and then we're not sure if he makes it home. I mean, if you're on Team Dog, I'm just saying.
So, Mike, you've clearly watched this movie quite a bit, and deep insights. What would you say? What were some of the parts that were just not only so jarring when you watched it, but just like captivating for you that you really, really enjoyed?
I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say that we need an entire prequel to explain what happened at the Norwegian camp, but right. When they go to the Norwegian camp and they are looking around and you're getting that, what the hell happened here? And when you get that image of the person whose face is split, that always gets me. It's like, how could this have happened? And you just see that, and just trying to put yourself in MacReady, and I think it's Doc that goes with them, like their shoes. You know, what are they thinking? And coming across that big empty ice, you know, the crater there with the where the creature was, and that burned up creature outside. And then of course, yeah, let's take it back to camp. That's a smart idea, right?
That's Norwegian.
Yeah. It's all in Norwegian.
That's the thing that it felt the most believable. I roll my eyes a bit when people hit some of the unbelievable stuff in horror and sci-fi too hard. But the whole don't go near the obviously dangerous and creepy thing. But they thought it was inert. Like they were thinking, okay, this is a dead organism. They weren't thinking of it as an active threat.
It had been burned up to a crisp. Yeah, who's to think that anything is going to come out of that?
There are so many like specific, like well-crafted images. It's interesting how the block of ice really does stick in your head. I remember when I saw that scene the first time vividly, and the guy who killed himself, maybe not the thing with the blood, like the frozen blood down his arm, and then I feel like the block played a part. Trevor, did you play the Xbox game with me? The sequel to The Thing? Do you remember that?
I can't remember.
Jacob and I played that a lot, and we really enjoyed it. That kind of re-got me back into The Thing in middle school. But, I mean, so many iconic things that really it's a very simple movie. Maybe it's like over a period of 2 days. That nobody's sleeping when they start not trusting each other really – the grogginess and the paranoia, like it's a very tense situation, but add on it like exhaustion. Like they even mention it a couple of times verbally. They don't beat you over the head with it, but they're like we got to watch each other. Like when we're sleeping, it's a terrifying scenario.
The other thing that always sticks out in my mind, speaking of simple images, the Norwegian explorers, when they're have their arms out and they're showing the size of the ship by them, you know, like on that videotape, with their arms out. And I want to say there was a kind of a similar shot in that Chris Pratt movie that just came out.
The Tomorrow War.
And I was like, as they made their way to that Chinese mountain or glacier or whatever, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is the thing. Yeah, and they find the ship in the ice, and they have all the creatures in the ship. I was like, oh, okay, yep. So it's nice. It's like the thing with time travel. It's almost like you get the prequel and the movie both together. So
was it good?
No, it wasn't good at all.
It did not look good. I did not watch it.
It wasn't. I watched it. It wasn't the thing. I'll tell you that.
Another thing that I thought was interesting, I knew a couple of them were, Mike, but when I went back and re-listened to your podcast the last week or two here, so you have in the cast, I'd like to talk about the performances a little bit. You have Kurt Russell, a couple of other actors who had done a little bit, but most of them were stage actors. So another real strength of the movie is it's an all-male ensemble. There's 12 actors, and they're all really good actors, and they did a ton of rehearsals and pre-production together. So like, it's only an hour 45 minute movie. Not everybody gets their own like time to shine, but these feel like real people who really know each other and have like real history together. So like, I'm just impressed every time I watch it, how impressive everybody is, even when they really don't have that much screen time or that much to do.
Yeah, they all have their own characters, even if they only just have like a line or two, which is
even if it's just in their head. The little breakdowns were hilarious. Somebody, I think it was maybe what's the name of the podcast? I'm blanking. Blank Check. They've been sharing some stuff because they're doing a John Carpenter thing right now. But yeah, really just simple, good, high quality storytelling. So Trevor, I would love to hear your thoughts, because you texted me multiple times. You're like, I don't trust MacReady. I don't trust MacReady.
Yeah.
Did you ever get over that?
No.
Interesting. Did he actually use his real blood?
Well, the whole thing. No, like, is the, like, they even say it in the film, like, you know, the sheriff dude or whatever, the guy who wears the cowboy hat everywhere. No, that's somebody else.
MacReady?
Anyway, the guy with the pistol.
Guy, yeah.
Okay, yeah, Gary. The old guy who looks like, I don't know, sheriff from like, I don't know.
It's kind of like some old like Antarctic space western.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You're just like, why does this guy have like a cowboy hat on over his parka? Anyway, but he's like, this is all BS to the blood test. Like, how do we even know this works? As far as like torching the blood or whatever. And I think to some degree, like it did reveal something, but we don't know if there were other false positives or negatives necessarily in that test. Right. Like we don't, like he just says like if we don't trust MacReady as a narrator, MacReady just says that the thing will react this way. But could the thing say that and lie in order to preserve itself? You know, and you know, the dog who is the thing, you know, team dog, is running around for hours before they ever decide to lock it up in the kennel. There's very clear shots in the beginning of the film of it pretty much going and touching around everybody.
Oh, that amazing shot when it's the silhouette of a person and we don't even know whose silhouette it is. And we see the dog go into his room. It's like,
I guess you don't. I always assumed it was the guy. Man, I'm blanking on some of these guys' names now. The guy who MacReady shot in the head at the end when he came at him with the scalpel. I always assumed, because he's the one. Clark was the one who loved the dogs. I just assumed it was Clark, but you're right. It's just a silhouette. Yeah. That's an incredible scene. The dog in the hallway.
Yeah,
it does pass, which if you're going to assume that was Clark at the beginning, which isn't necessary, then you'd be like, well, that would potentially cast some dispersion on the blood test.
Yeah, I just don't know. Like, I don't.
I took it at face value.
I don't know that the film takes a strong position on, you know, what I'm saying. You know, it's not like it is right or wrong either way. But like, there's just something compelling in some sense of like, really, they could all be the thing, you know, at any point in the movie, they could 100% of them could be the thing. And you would still have the realities play out the way they are. Though I think what's interesting is that scene in the blood test, then when they do test Clark's blood, the guy says to him, so I guess that makes you a murderer, right?
Which ironically, right after he was willing to kill MacReady, whether or not he was the thing, because somebody said the same thing to him. Right before, they're like, we don't know it's the thing. He goes, well, like, so be it or whatever. Like, he was ready to excuse that right before. And then he was throwing it in Mac's face. Like, he was kind of the antagonist to MacReady's protagonist, but not in an overly, like,
he was almost like who died and made you boss kind of way, you know, like, just this is all junk, like, and who put you in charge?
Yeah, I like that whole struggle for leadership that they have. And at one point, he's just like, oh, I'll take charge. And they're like, no. your temper's too hot. No, we can't have that.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Getting a little bit back to the effects. One that kind of threw me off, I was like, wait, what? Was when the guy who was locked up in the shed for a while, who was like destroying everything near the end, he just grabbed dude's face and then his fingers were in his face. I was like, okay,
It was a horror movie jump scare at first when he just appears and you're like, oh, like you get jolted. And then something you've never seen before, like he puts his hands into his face to like assimilate him.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the part where that's what I'm thinking. Like that's that almost like paradox of do they know or don't they? Because he seemed very aware that he was like he hadn't transformed or started kind of that metamorphosis process. He just grabbed dude's face, but you could tell he was looking after himself because now he covered his mouth and he was like looking back behind to make sure nobody else was coming, nobody heard. And so that seems like a level of awareness that it's the thing. And, he did take him over,
knowing that he wasn't it. Some of this is, it's a movie.
Yeah.
You got to roll with
that's
it.
So. Right. Right. But still, it's just it throws in another level of mystery as to the awareness of the host as well as the parasite.
Mm-hmm. There was something that one of you guys said earlier where I was reminded, and I guess, you know, kind of going back to this was originally, you know, the Thing from Another World was coming out around, it was like more of a Cold War paranoia type of
movie. The first movie?
Yeah. And then it kind of reminded me, just from one of the descriptions, was the idea of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. This whole idea of these pods that create these perfect replicas, and then, okay, now what do we do with the old host body to get rid of that? But with the pods, they do definitely know each other. Those pod people conspire and have this whole thing, and they're just like, great, okay, and they have their whole plan and they can communicate that plan. They're like, okay, we're gonna load up all these trucks with pods and we're gonna send these out all over, you know, America and then eventually the world. It's so interesting that we've got both of these Cold War paranoia type films, both about people just being completely taken over, and one is do they know it, and the other one's do they not know it. And I know that in the original thing it was not nearly this whole idea of taking over bodies. It was much more of a creature feature.
Yeah, it's more like a Frankenstein monster type deal.
Exactly. Yeah, you just had the one creature. You just had James Arness with that kind of overly large brow type of thing. You look more like Richard Kiel from
like a knockoff Frankenstein.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Never really got a good look at him, if memory serves.
Yeah, just a big lumbering.
Right,
giant.
They described him more as like a carrot from outer space, because that was the thing that his cells were more vegetative than they were. Mammalian.
Oh wow,
I gotta go back and rewatch that. That has been quite some time. I did not grow up with that one.
Yeah, no, there are nods to that in the Carpenter one, of course. I love the title burning in the Carpenter one. It looks very similar to what they did in the earlier version. But yeah, I like a lot of films from the 1950s, but that one, it's one of those like, oh yeah, don't talk about remakes always being bad because you have things like The Thing.
That's what I always go to.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You can tell, I mean, movie like medium to big movie fans will maybe even recognize that potentially. Like Carpenter has a love for that. Babysitter in Halloween was watching The Thing from Another World. So that was before Carpenter even had the assignment to remake it. Like, so he loved the story. Like you can tell he brought a passion and his kind of non-insulting, like B movie auteur style to this thing that he loved. Mm-hmm. And the stars aligned, like God opened the doors and Rob Bottin came across his path, and this crazy wild and talented 22-year-old, and Universal gave him the budget to make these insane creatures that like legit in some ways kind of still have yet to be topped in some of those set pieces. Vince, what did did you see the defibrillator scene coming at all, Vince? I would have loved to have seen your reaction to that.
Oh yeah, another point of like shock and disgust. Like, oh, his arms. Yeah, that one threw me, and I think that's probably why I enjoyed it. Because, like I said, I'm really not into old school movies that much. But I think that element of mystery,
that's real.
and then it's like, I don't know. You say Mike, you even mentioned this. It's like, you say it's just survival, but that seemed malicious.
Oh yeah,
because it's like, bro, you created sharp teeth in a dude's chest and bit arms off,
right?
Like, that doesn't seem like you're just like, hey guys, no worries, I just need to survive, don't worry about it. That seems more like I got a
hunter.
It
is a hunter.
Don't defibrillate donkey Satan, y'all. This is just, that is not according to the medical code.
We're gonna have to tweet that at some point when the episode's out. That particular, so as of this recording, I'm gonna go see this movie in about a week and a half. And one of my local theaters here, they're doing Carpenter Fest. Ooh, and it's nice. The whole Apocalypse trilogy. And I've never seen any of those three films in the theater. But I can't wait for the blood test and the defibrillator scene. I'm hoping there's some people there who don't see it coming, and just to experience that in a theater, I'm just gonna relish that.
Well, they're so smart too, because you get the just horror after horror after horror with that whole thing, and then you get the guy's head coming off and
spider
is in the spider legs, and then that line of "you gotta be kidding me." I mean, that is such a great laugh line. It just punches you every single time. So you
there's not a whole lot of mix with jokes or levity.
No.
That's kind of the one.
Yeah. Well, and just that character is the funny guy. Yeah. And so when he ends up being the thing, it's like, oh my God, not him of all the
and
people.
And his eyeball, eyeball still get like.
And when he just starts
trying
shaking,
to think. His like blowed up, like, because it's puffy, like it doesn't even quite pop. Right. But like it blows up and like blood gushes from the socket. Like that's still maybe the grossest. That's the kind of thing that gives me the heebie-jeebies each time.
Yeah. When he kind of starts absorbing windows, when their arms are like one thing, and he's got them up there, and it's like,
he's yanking them up to the ceiling.
And you feel so bad for windows when he's just sitting there and he starts
wrong
to
place,
move again.
Wrong time.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
When he never stood a chance.
Even when you know it's coming, you know what the actions that these men are going to eventually take. In either thing self-preservation or human self-preservation, there's not really any unlikable characters. Like, it's frustrating in a visceral sense a little bit when he destroys the communications array, but you're like, no, that's actually smart. Uh-huh. These 12 guys are all screwed. They're all done. Like, the thing is there, maybe some of them will die without being assimilated, but no one's getting out of this, so we need to destroy our transportation, destroy our communication, and burn this all to the ground.
Exactly. Yeah. And I know they don't like Gary, the guy with the gun, but I always like Gary anyway. He is a little bit of a blowhard. I mean, they give him a real hard time, like, you know, Captain with his pop gun and all that kind of stuff.
He does not
want
to spend the rest of the winter tied to the couch.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm fine with Gary. I find him very enjoyable. And just that actor, Gary Moffat, he's so good.
Gary shows the Norwegians up, too, like right off the bat. Norwegian from the helicopter can't hit the dadgum dog with a scoped rifle, walks into the American camp, kneecaps a dude, and then Gary
from the window with a freaking revolver shoots him in the knee.
Gets him right in the noggin, just like boom, from like 30 feet away. You're like... Yeah. Man, this guy was not part of that, you know, that Norwegian Olympic event where they do the skiing and then the rifle thing, and then he was obviously not a part of that team at all.
Yeah, and that's a part where I was like, okay, I'm reminded that this is a movie when he like did his first grenade, and it was like
that part was
it was like 10 feet away from the dog, and I'm like, okay, you weren't aiming for the dog.
No, whenever that one point. Dude like dropped the grenade too from the one helicopter pilot who's like only seen is like his only action is to die very quickly and badly. Like, he grabs the grenade, drops it in the snow, and then like. Was he like foofing snow on it? Like
trying to get it and throw it.
It looked like he was trying to like cover it with some snow real quick. And you're like, dude, just run away from the thing. Like, what are you thinking?
I believe, if I'm correct about that, I think that was Kurt Russell's brother-in-law at the time.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
He was just there and gave him a part.
Well, was he related to Larry Franco? Am I remembering that correctly? Okay. Yep. Yeah. The producer guy. Yeah.
Man. Vince, you're our biggest resident music guy. What did you think of the score?
It was good. And I think that's what kept me turning my head. Because it definitely, it wasn't out of place. Like, you can watch some movies and certain scenes seem to not match with the music. Uh-huh. And it's just like, oh, okay, it's eventful or whatever, but whatever. Whereas this, I think it was, each one was impactful and intentional in for each scene that it was being used in. So I think it was, it's almost to the point where you can kind of just, you go beyond the music because it's carrying with the film. Uh-huh. And so you're not even hearing it, even though you are, because it's just adding that element of suspense and awe to whatever's going on. It sets the tone
very well.
So it was good. It was very good.
I mean, that's one. John Carpenter's films always have incredible soundtracks. And that was that the first one that he didn't do himself?
I think so, yeah.
Ennio Morricone, one of the top original music makers for film.
So, Mike, so obviously at the beginning you have the alien and kind of the sci-fi nature of what's going on, and then by the end there's a lot going on throughout the film. What would you say to the audience? What does this movie communicate about trust in people? Because that's a huge theme of the movie, of how do we get to trust.
So get into the substance.
It's definitely not going to teach you how to trust people, obviously.
No.
What do you think the movie communicates about human interaction when it comes to trust?
Gosh, I mean, if there's one lesson, it's don't trust anybody, right? You can't even trust your computer because it cheats at chess. You know, it's like,
that makes me laugh too when he pours the JMB in the computer.
I mean, really, there is no close. Even though these guys have known each other and they can rib each other and all that, you never feel like there's a close friendship between any of these guys. It's not like you always see two of these guys hanging out. It's not like Knowles and Childs, even though they're the only African Americans there, are like tight. They seem very distant from each other. Everybody seems distant from each other. I mean, Clark is the only thing that Clark cares about is those dogs, which I can understand, but like, he is such an outsider. But everybody's an outsider. There's nobody where you're just like, oh yeah,
it's these a functional guys are great. Team. It's not really like a family.
No, definitely not.
They're cogs in the research machine, which also is a really just smart storytelling thing for setting it in an Antarctic research station. Each of these guys has their roles.
Yep.
Hire really good actors, and then you like passively or actively genuinely do care about all these guys. And you kind of want everybody to make it, even though you pretty much know, not that long through the movie, like, there's pretty much no way anyone's going to survive this.
No, and to kind of pick up on that still is the idea of Mac having a shack, and then they have Blair in his own, you know, place and stuff. Yeah. So it's just like, kind of isolating these guys, you really get the feel for the layout of the camp too, which I appreciate, so that you know that there are these separate spaces and you explore so many of those throughout the film. I mean, even though it's other than when they go to the Norwegian camp, it's pretty much a one location film, but you never feel bored. You never feel like, oh my God, I'm going back to this room. They explore different spaces within this outpost so well.
And Dean Cundey, who incredibly you got to talk to on your podcast for your episode, a lot of the key scenes that help the viewers understand more of what's happening, they don't feel like exposition dumps, but they are 2 to 12 guys in rooms talking, and like you said, it never feels boring. He doesn't use like crazy angles or ridiculous camera movements or heavy cutting. It's good dialogue. It's good actors, a really great score. and just really simple stuff. Like, I defend Carpenter a lot. And so, I mean, Carpenter has a ton of fans. He's one of my favorites with what he does. But I mean, cinephiles can sometimes kind of look down on the B movie, but he's an absolute master at what he does.
100%. Yeah, I don't think anybody should look down on this guy. I mean, he knows what he's doing and he does it very smart. And you see the nods. I mean, you were talking about how it feels like a Western. It's like, yes, it does feel like a Western. He loves Westerns. He's going to try to inject that into these films. It's perfect. I absolutely love it. And yeah, having Mac have that great sombrero and everything, and he's kind of that, you know, the stranger that rides into town type of character. I absolutely love it. And he's very smart to do those things. And having Morricone do a score for John Carpenter that is the most John Carpenter score that Morricone has ever done is fantastic.
Yeah.
It just so simple, just that little boom boom. Oh man, just such a heartbeat going through the entire thing, and it just becomes such an important auditory motif. I love it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Vince.
No, I was just going to ask. So we kind of gone into the certain elements of these movies. And Mike, it sounds like you are definitely into the film game. Like you've been doing a lot of watching, a lot of ingesting of different genres. So obviously the thing has been remade before, and I think it hasn't done too well.
Prequel that was basically a remake.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess the question is, ideally, knowing the directors that are out there today, knowing the technology that's out there today, who would you say could take a good stab at like a The Thing remake in 2021, 2022?
The whole thing about the special effects is kind of a sore spot, because when they were doing the prequel, they were doing practical effects, and then they decided, or the studio, somebody decided, no, we're going to use digital effects, and it just doesn't have the same weight to it.
You can check it out on YouTube.
Yeah,
they filmed the whole thing practical, and it's incredible. Like, I kind of like, is it 2010 or 11?
Yeah, I think so.
The Mary Elizabeth Winstead one? Mm-hmm. I kind of like it. In some ways. And if they just hadn't post-production gone in and added digital crap over all of the actual practical effects, like, it wouldn't be John Carpenter's The Thing, but I think it would be pretty well respected.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and there was even an episode of The X-Files, I think it was called Ice, that was similar to it as well, and that's a great episode. I mean, the whole idea of the paranoia and the small space and put all these characters into one area together, I think is great. But to answer your question, I mean, I would think somebody that can do the slow burn is probably the person you want to look at, so maybe like a James Wan, or is it Ari Aster, like some of these guys.
Say, don't do it. Ari Aster, I would not mind seeing.
Seeing that either. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the guys who did.
They could do that prequel, like on the Norwegian side, like Mike was talking about earlier.
That's what I would mind if they remade the prequel. Oh,
there you go.
Right. Yeah.
I forget his name. The guy who did, or the guys who did, Don't Breathe, maybe. But I really do like Ari Aster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see James Wan. Because
that was a good bit of character and kind of gross, like, extreme stuff with them.
Would you want them not to do VFX on this one? Just to try to keep it as true to the 1982 film?
I mean, if they could, I think that would be fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I'd rather they just don't touch it at all, but
I don't even think it needs the edition that I'm going to see next weekend is the new 4K print. Shoot, like my local theater, one of the cool things that they do every now and then is they have VHS weekends. Like, it's good. I don't think it needs much more than a Blu-ray. Like, it's a perfect movie. It's a perfect movie.
Yeah, to me it is as well. There's really keep showing
it.
Well, and
bring it back every year.
I was writing on Facebook, I'm like, I don't think I'll ever get sick of this movie, because I've seen it so many times and it still has that impact. And I still, yes, you know that things are coming, but it still gets you every single time. As soon as that chest opens up with those shark teeth, just like,
it's so good.
Yes. As soon as, like, you see MacReady holding that that dish, and you can see if you look really hard that his hand is fake when he puts that needle in, the thing just jumps out, and that stupid noise that creature makes.
I don't know what they use for the Foley, but it gets you every time.
Oh, it's so good. Or those little jump scares of people walking by something, or even the way, one of my favorite scenes is, I think it's when Mac is doing that recording, the way that he's framed, there's an empty space in the background, and you're just waiting for something to come like into the room.
It's going
to
happen.
Psych.
Yeah. And it's kind of neat, too, because it's framed kind of the same way later on when they see the head crawling out of the room, and they're on the other side of the screen, but then luckily they see that it's crawling out, but it's very much that same, here's an empty space, what's going to come into that empty space?
Yeah.
Genius.
A lot of movie people talk about, like, hey, like, if you could go back to any time in history and kind of like watch anything for the first time with an audience, what would it be? I've had different answers over the years, but the first time I listened to your podcast, I don't think I'll ever have a different answer. One of your guests, I don't remember which one because you did a number of interviews, talked about he first saw the movie at a drive-in double feature with Blade Runner and The Thing, and that's like, that's the most insane, like, to see both of those movies for the first time as like a, I don't know, 12 to 16 year old. Like, that would just be insane. And both of those movies with similar kind of opposite ends of the spectrum themes, like The Thing is like, am I human? Are these guys human? Blade Runner is like, what is human? Mm-hmm. Like, they're both very pulpy, but also substantive in their own ways, and like, kind of hated when they came out, but now are, I've seen Blade Runner in the theater a couple times. I'm about to see The Thing for the first time. Like, these are beloved films that are never going away.
Right.
So I would have loved to have seen that in the theater. Trevor, if you were in Kansas City, I might try to drag you to go see this with me.
I'd go see it with you for sure if I was there. It sounds like fun.
I hope I can stay awake for In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah.
I think that starts at like 10:45.
That's different. I'll be praying for you. Thoughts and prayers.
Drink some coffee.
Yeah, for real. So, like, jumping in on the ending here, I think I think it's about the right time now. What do you think? Like, I know we've talked about Thing prequels, but like, is there a Thing sequel? Does The Thing, like,
it's a video game.
Does it survive? Does it get out? You know, like, what do we make? What do we analyze this ending with these two guys?
I mean, either way, whether Childs is an alien or MacReady's an alien or both, I mean, unless neither are aliens, we are because somebody's
going to come to neither. Because it's kind of a dark, like, these two guys who are facing off and be like, I don't trust you, you don't trust me. Like, if they're both not the Thing.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like the irony of that, but that's kind of dark.
And they're just going to freeze to death, and at some point somebody's going to come investigate, and hopefully they don't take those bodies back with them. Hopefully they don't find pieces of any of these other guys. Yeah. Because otherwise we are screwed.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your read, Trev? Because I still kind of read them as neither of them are the Thing.
No, I think we're screwed. Like, I agree with Mike on that. Like, I think one or both of them are the Thing at that point. Like, I didn't trust Mac for a while since whenever they find his jacket or whatever. Out there, and it's all messed up.
Clear red herring.
And also just the fact that he takes charge, like, made me suspect him. And maybe I'm interpreting, maybe I'm bringing some 2021 into 1980 something in that, but like, just like, I'm almost with I forget the guy's name, but the guy who we talked about earlier, Childs, like, just really going toe to toe to him. I mean, I almost empathize with him more, just like, you know, like,
on
you
the nerdy
just
side of
immediately,
things.
But and it would be so perfect for the Thing to like take somebody who would take charge and like then be able to orchestrate everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, not, you know,
I think it's a little bit more mustache twirly potentially.
You know how I do.
If you're getting very into the nitty gritty and nerdy, and the prequel kind of touched on this too, I think in a super interesting way, as far as what the Thing can recreate biological matter. Mm-hmm. If you look again, super nerdy, Childs has an earring, which the Thing ostensibly could not recreate. So it's very likely that Childs isn't. And then it's kind of like, do you trust Mac or not? I kind of do, because he's Kurt Russell, and I want to believe. Yeah. I want to believe in him.
I think that's the thing that makes me not do it, though, is because like the very fact that it's like it's very obvious that I'm supposed to trust this guy, and therefore I don't.
Right. Well, looking back on hindsight, obviously Kurt Russell was the biggest name in it, but he doesn't take charge for a long time. Like, he's just one of 12,
right?
For a really long, like, he's not the. He's not the protagonist of the film.
Right.
He eventually takes leadership because he kind of accepts the situation in ways that other characters don't. He's like, all right, this is terrible. Let's handle it.
Yeah.
And actually, he and Childs are really the only two that kind of are fully, I don't know if it's, you want to say like they're alpha or whatever, but they are the ones who understand what's going on, understand something that needs to be done, but they are not simpatico.
Yeah. And while Mac is very, like, he's unyielding, once he does take that, I totally agree with you. Once he takes that role, it's not a democracy or anything. He's not open to challengers. Like, he's going to sit in this driver's seat, and if you get in his way, if you come at him, he will end you.
Shoot you in the head.
Yeah.
Human or not.
Yeah, exactly. And so to me, like that, I don't know. It's just, it's very interesting. It's just very interesting.
Mm. Yeah, it's very, very Law of the Jungle.
Yeah.
Vince, what do you think? That's true. What was your read, or did you have one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think they're both. I think they were both the thing. Because I'm thinking of, okay, if the thing works like an infection, then even though it's not airborne, I think everybody in some way, shape, or form has come in contact with it at some point, whether it's from the initial point of petting the dog or letting the dog lick you all the way.
Well, I like that they don't give you clear rules. No, like, right. It's not like Night of the Living Dead where it's like, you get bit, you're a zombie. The end.
Well, what I'm saying is, ultimately, I think if you come in contact with it, it seems to be able to, because it can break off into its own kind of organism, just being split up and split off, you know, take the head, take the arm, and it's all its own thing. It can almost infect anyone, or at least it seemed that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could definitely go to believe that Childs and
MacReady
are both infected, and then just kind of, you know, they get to a stopping point where they're both really tired and just trying to sit there, and it's like, all right, well, let's see who makes it out, kind of thing. But ultimately, it's like, I'm thinking, all right, yeah, the thing got out. The big thing in the ground probably burnt up, but the mini things and those guys are alive and well.
Well, again, because of the nature of it, you just kind of got a torch. You kind of got to nuke the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. I mean, the, you know, think, even if a finger from one of those guys is still around and it gets picked up by somebody, you know, put into a hazmat bag or whatever, and that bag defrosts.
Right.
Next thing you know, there's going to be little legs growing out of that finger and a little head popping up and just like, hey, cool. Now I get to take over the rest of the world. This is fantastic. So
yeah,
they are definitely screwed.
I hope that movie does not get made.
Unless it's Ariel. The thing takes over.
Top hat on and a cane. It'll be fantastic. A little song and dance.
Oh, gosh.
It's going to be like I Am Legend or something. So to one other thing, though, like, as far as the thing's aims, obviously we're not given any, and you mentioned earlier, it seems like just survival, but I want to think about Blair, because I think Blair got the best deal out of everybody in probably this whole film, because he kind of is infected early and then they just throw him in the like isolated area. And he's like, cool, I'm just going to go make an ice cave and build a spaceship.
He had a couple of really funny moments.
And
like, I don't know whether it's tense or to laugh when it opens it up and he's got the noose there.
Yes, I'm considering it. I'm feeling much better now.
Yeah. Right. Can I please come
He turned
back.
Himself to way more productive things, started building the spaceship. And I'm like, bro, yeah. Like, then they blow up a spaceship and I felt bad. I was like, man, he worked hard on that thing.
Gotta be keeping an eye on Trevor over here.
Do we make the assumption? He's just trying to go home. Yeah, that I was just about to ask. Do we make the assumption that it was trying to just go back home?
I'm like, where because it did crash.
Yeah, it wasn't kind like they were saying, okay, next planet, Earth. That's not at least how it seemed the intro was doing. It looks like it was going, like, swaying, and then it just kind of crashed into Earth.
Let's look at this movie from the thing's perspective, man. All these guys are just messing around with it, and it's just trying to get home.
The oppressed foreigner, Trevor? Yeah. Is that what we're doing here?
The thing's history of the John Carpenter's movie.
I really don't want that movie.
Geez.
Just keeps saying I come in peace, but nobody could understand it.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Thankfully, it hadn't met the ET alien yet, and it couldn't take that form.
Oh, right, man.
When I tear the jowls off the dog, that means I want to be friends.
Right. Yeah.
This is not how you guys say hello here.
My God.
It's just a little note. Very impressive dog acting.
Oh, yeah.
Very impressive.
Oh, yeah. Especially the one when he's coming into the kennel and he's just like slowly moving in and then just stops there. Oh, man. And all the other dogs are just like, get out of here.
Lose their minds.
We don't need you here. And he's just like, okay, let me just lay down and let's see.
He's like, I'm a normal dog. Hello, fellow dogs. Exactly.
What do you think about these tentacles coming out of my back? Yeah.
Yeah. That was wild. Now,
this is my last question before we move on to shout outs. Initially when he comes in and the dog, you know, starts to do its metamorphosis, what's basically happening? I think that's the question that I often had throughout. Is it changing because it's trying to survive in the environment? Is it changing because it's hungry? Or does it have to change, and thus it does? I was really like asking that question, like, why does it do just stay in one form and chill? So does anybody have any ideas or theories as to the necessity of it needing to keep changing into someone else?
He needs to change forms to freak you out, man.
I think it's a monster movie. Yeah, like it's. I don't know if it has deep personal goals other than survival and reproduction.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that when it comes in as the dog with all the other dogs, it wants to take all those other dogs over just so that it can make it easier for it to keep spreading. That's the logic that I see as far as that goes. And just that they stopped it before he could take over the rest of them. I could see, you know, come in the morning and there being, you know, 10, 12 thing dogs in there.
Yeah. Yeah, almost like the same logic of just a virus, you know, just replicates.
Gotcha. But with much cooler makeup effects.
Yeah, and that incredible Foley with the, like, that insect sound going on. Oof. Oh, I love that. Man.
Yeah.
You love it. It's disturbing for me. I'm just like, my back itches.
We've got a couple cicadas in the neighborhood right now, and so they've been chirping like crazy. So watching the thing while those are out.
Thing dogs.
Ooh.
So you take out your headphones and you still hear it. You're like,
wait a second. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
It's outside the door right now.
You're like, it is the sequel.
It is the sequel to the thing.
That's good.
Let's transition to substance shoutouts, especially when we have guests. We like to kick it over to them. So this segment, typically we cover, even when we're not covering like movies, cover kind of deeper topics, and we'd like to take a break from that in the substance shoutouts and say, hey, what have you, and I imagine you've been doing quite a bit of watching, what have you been watching, reading, listening to that you've just found enjoyable, stimulating, challenging? What have you been enjoying recently?
Well, right now we are in the middle of our Checktember month, so we're recording still in September, and just watching some of these Czech comedies are just amazing. I've had such a good time. We just did a one on What Would You Say to a Nice Plate of Spinach, and one called Girl on a Broomstick. they've just been fantastic. So I can't recommend those enough. And then luckily Second Run is releasing a lot of these on DVD and Blu-ray. So we just had a Blu-ray come out from them. Interestingly, it came out the same day as the Dune Blu-ray, which I was fortunate enough to do audio commentary on. And then I did
You're really tempting me to buy that one. I don't even like that movie all that much, but the new cover art is awesome. It's and I'm definitely going to at least get it to check out the commentary.
And then that same day, there was a Czech film called The Fifth Horseman is Fear, where it was myself and Kat Ellinger and Jonathan Owen all did commentary for it. And that's another, that's not a comedy by any stretch of the imagination. It's very dire, but so well made and just such a great film. So highly recommend that one as well.
Nice.
Awesome. And I'll definitely be linking to your podcast in the show, other than the Czech Timbers. I'll maybe put a link to some of my favorites. Do you have ones that you like to recommend to maybe things that are maybe a little bit more well-known to kind of get people in where you're like either had or a great interview?
Phil, any specific Halloween recommendations, since this is spookies. Our Halloween Manhunter episode.
Was great. I loved the Manhunter episode.
That was a lot of fun to do. Yeah, I'm trying to, The Howling, I think it's the 40th anniversary of The Howling.
I need to listen to that one.
That was a fun one to talk about. I don't know if you've ever seen the film Seconds, the John Frankenheimer film with Rock Hudson.
I did. Was that, didn't that get in the Criterion Collection?
I think it did, yeah.
I did see that one once a long time ago. And I just remember it feeling like it was odd. I don't remember very much of it. I remember feeling, I'm not in the right mood for this.
Yeah, it's a very odd film, but I have to say it's kind of upsetting in a way too. And so I would recommend that as a horror pick as well.
This one is very strange. And this, so Trevor, we are a partnership here on The Substance for Mike and for the listeners. True. I don't get to just do whatever I want. When it comes to the substantive cinemas, I did reach out to him.
You're
and
welcome,
he had a
listeners.
Teeny tiny bit of interest. I would love to talk to Richard Kelly. I loved your Southland Tales episode. It's such a bizarre film, but I have loved it from the moment I saw it when it first came out. I had the DVD of the original. I watched it so much. Like, I like Donnie Darko, but Southland Tales was kind of my... I just got obsessed with everything because it's so bizarre and strange, but it feels like a real, like lived in, like it's like a big mess, but it's on purpose.
Yeah.
It's kind of a singular film. I would recommend if anybody has seen it or is interested, I love that episode.
That was a lot of fun to do and finally made me sit down and read the comics and find out more about the movie and why is it the mess that it is.
I need to rewatch the comics and then reread the comics and then watch the can cut.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you like that movie, I would definitely recommend that.
Not that enough nice. People talk about it, but I don't know if we can quite get that one on The Substance. I pushed Trevor and Vince pretty far on some of these movies. I don't quite know what we would think of Southland.
We got to keep you based.
That's true. Well, Mike, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you guys. Yeah, thank I really you. Appreciate this. It's so nice to talk about movies, and you guys have been just so great to talk with. Thank you.
Yeah, our pleasure.
Thanks for coming.
Absolutely.
So that was Mike White of the Projection Booth, and man, I hope if you've made it this far, listener, you enjoyed that as much as we did. That was a blast.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Had a lot of fun.
I've been listening to that dude for years, and just we've talked about this before on the show for maybe some of our mailbag and listener questions. Like, one of the great things about doing the show has just been talking to cool people who put out stuff that you like. I mean, I've bought a few Blu-ray. I've purchased a handful of Blu-rays. I love the thing, but I already own it on Blu-ray. I bought the other Blu-ray primarily. It's got an extra documentary on it, but I primarily bought it because I was like, oh, Mike White did a commentary track on that, and got the Last Starfighter Blu-ray primarily for the same reason. So just cool to talk to people whose work you appreciate. Definitely, if you're a movie fan, go check out the Projection Booth deep dives. Definitely not every episode's for everybody. He covers a wide variety of film, but like you said, he's doing Czechoslovakian stuff right now. If you are interested in expanding your horizons, viewer discretion advised, but check out his library. He's got a lot of really high quality stuff there.
If you haven't bought The Substance yet, you can still get in on the 21 and 21 campaign.
Yes, you can.
Going strong.
We got
through
2 months
December.
Left. Because this will be dropping on Halloween, so we got 2 months left, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hopefully, by the time you're hearing this, we're a little bit closer. We maybe even have reached $100 a month. That would be incredible.
Hey, help get us there. Sir. It honestly, like, there's stuff that we want to do with the website and things, and that we.
Let us know what you think about the website by now. It's live.
True story.
So in order to do that, check out the anchor link below in the notes. And we would ask that if you're able to pick the $5 or $10 a month option, and then that'll just kind of help us. It's so encouraging. Like whenever we get the 5-star Apple reviews or we get a new person signing up in the audience who listens to the show, appreciates the show, kind of come on and support it. It's super encouraging and helps us
for
do.
Sure.
We're already going to do this for free and put out incredible shows. Like we got, honestly, it's maybe not the most listened to podcast because like celebrities have movie podcast shows. It's one of the best in the actual film world. He's been written up in all of the film publications and then in a lot of like Forbes and Washington Post. Like he has a legit podcast. So we bring in high quality people here on The Substance. And if that's something you like, consider joining us. Or if monthly donation is not your style, but still you want to throw us a little bit of cash, you can do that on Cash App at $ The Substance Pod.
And tell us about your favorite horror movie. We're talking about The Thing, but tell us which one is your favorite.
Yeah.
Either tell us what you liked about The Thing or what you found jarring or captivating or just a favorite horror film that you've enjoyed, whether in the past or recently. One of the best ways to do that is actually on our social media. So start following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The Substance Pod.
And if they're substantive, maybe throw out some suggestions for next October.
There you go.
Exactly. And on that, you can either create a post and tag us, letting us know about your favorite horror film, or you can just comment under our posts and let us know what you thought about The Thing or a different film. That's also where our giveaways are going to be. So always follow for those and just interact with us in the comment section and just tagging us on the socials.
Our email is thesubstancepod@gmail.com. We also have a phone line that you can call, leave a voice message or testimonials, those kind of things. That is 913-703-3883. Give us a ring or write us a note there, and we'd love to hear from you. And until then, we will see you next time
on The Substance.
Peace.
Boom. All right, we're going. Okay. You've landed on The Substance, a podcast aimed at being biblical, thoughtful, and human. Join us each week as we engage the culture without the culture war. I'm your host, Trevor A. What?
Wow.
Cool.
It's appropriate for this movie where you don't know who's who.
That is perfect. Wow. No. Try that again. I was kind of shocked myself there. Okay.
Who am I?
Let me start that over.